back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield, and I'm joined by my co-host. What's going on today, Uncle Dig?
Oh, not much. Just enjoying a fine spring day. We are still due to get a little more snow in southern Oregon. We are having a very wet spring, and we are all very thankful for it.
Yeah, we are going to be getting some more rain coming up this weekend. A big storm's coming in, and they were having bomb cyclones and snow down in California as well. So it's really been kind of a crazy end of winter getting into spring here in the Northwest and the West Coast, too. So that's going to kind of move us into our monologue. We're going to talk about a stormy legislative session going on down in Olympia, Dig. And a couple shows ago, we were telling the audience about some bills that were down there. One of those was our home grow bill that we're always talking about, HB 1614, I believe it was. That bill, once again, made it to the Appropriations Committee and then was stopped. Disappointed on that, but not necessarily surprised. Now, next year, it will pick up right there in that same place, so it's a little closer to making it out of the House. But the bill's never even made it to the Senate, Dig, so who knows what's going to happen when it gets over there.
Oh, yeah, it's still got a long way to go. I've been really disappointed that it's been so hard to get what we here in Oregon consider a fundamental cannabis, you know, freedom and part of legalization, home grow. It's been such a struggle to even get it to tread water or even get it out for a vote in Washington state. So sometimes, it's just very frustrating sometimes the way Washington has gone two steps forward and three steps back on this cannabis thing over the years.
But a little good news is that the arrest protection bill, and I've heard this on the news the other day on the radio. Now, they got the actual description of the bill totally wrong, but they did say that the bill was heading up to the governor's or soon will be heading to the governor's desk. And that is the bill that will protect medical cannabis patients who aren't registered from arrest. Now, believe it or not, there's two types of medical cannabis patients in Washington state. One of those types, just someone who possesses just the sheet of paper and not a actual laminated card, that does not protect you from arrest. So that is a little quirk in the law. They're trying to fix that. The medical cannabis tax break bill is not dead, but it's actually moved into the budget negotiations, which goes on way longer because it affects the budget. So I'm not even sure where that's going to land. But I wanted to bring the audience's attention to something that's going on, and that is the ongoing debate here in Washington State about drug possession. And the Blake decision decriminalized all drugs here in the state, but the state legislature is about to put a criminal penalty back onto drug possession. It started out as a gross misdemeanor in the Senate. It's moved over to the House. Now they just moved it down to a misdemeanor, but it's going back to the Senate. So who knows where that's going to end up, but at the least, and I'm pretty disappointed about this outcome, at the least, drug possession will go back to being a misdemeanor here in Washington State instead of just something that is decriminalized.
Well, that's unfortunate because it seems like the Washington State Legislature is very slow to reform itself. And it doesn't seem like y'all have as robust a referendum system in Washington where you can gather signatures and get your government to do what you want it to do, whether they want to do it or not. So I think there's a lack of accountability for y'all's government, and it's really frustrating, and it's something that everyone should look at and do their best not to emulate. And that goes double for Washington's cannabis system as well.
Yeah, like you were just saying, we go two steps forward and three steps back. But, progress, I mean, I guess it's not a felony anymore, but still, it'll be a misdemeanor and then some type of drug treatment, and then apparently you could get the misdemeanor dropped. But for working class people and people that are houseless, these drug possession, these drug courts and all these different things, it's an extreme burden on people's life, and most of the time, people do walk away with a criminal record. So we are really wanting to decriminalize all drugs. And the big question I have on this, Dig, is why are we living in a society where somebody needs to use these really hard drugs and check out for a week? You know, it's really what we want to get to, housing, employment, health care. You know, that's going to help our drug problem, not throwing people in cages and making them go to court.
Agreed.
So I wanted to let the audience know that all the way up through season 5 of The Cannabis Corner is over on YouTube. You can search The Cannabis Corner on YouTube, and we have all of our seasons up there, except for the 4 shows of this one, this 6th season. They are all on YouTube, so you can go check those out. You can also find them in the Tacoma Public Library under The Cannabis Corner, and over on Radio Tacoma, we have our own page there with all the episodes of The Cannabis Corner if you're wanting to listen online.
And now, let's check the news.
This is a Cannabis Sativa special report.
We're going to get to our first story, and this was actually some good news out of the Washington State Legislature. And this was all over the news today on the radio and all over the internet. And that is that Washington State is actually to make it possible for people to get jobs without a drug test prior to employment. And this is going to really help a lot of people get more jobs, because I know a fair amount of people who use cannabis and they can't get a job because you have to take a drug test before getting employed.
Yeah, and this doesn't outlaw pre-employment drug screening. It just outlaws pre-employment cannabis screening.
Yes.
And this bill is a it, right, like we say about steps in the right direction. Now, this doesn't take 2 steps back, but it still allows for your work to impose drug testing on you if there's an accident, stuff like that. So it's still imperfect, and it still allows for certain drug-free workplaces. So it's a necessary reform, but I don't think it goes far enough.
Yeah, it could go further, but I had to take a drug test to work at Walmart. So for those kind of drugs, for a lot of those jobs, you definitely don't need a drug test to work for the
certain employees.
Well, right,
and I think there's a carve-out in this law where police still can't use cannabis. And I, for one, think that we should allow the police to use cannabis. I think it would go a long way to destigmatize cannabis for some of our most ill-informed members of the citizens, the police, about cannabis, and it might even serve to make Ed Troyer a little less dangerous.
Yeah, we could hope. And I just heard a news story today that suicides with police and firefighters is way up. So that's the leading cause of death, not things out on the job. I think having firefighters and police having access to cannabis on the job or after work would be really good to help with their PTSD, to help with some of the symptoms that they're having to get out there and deal with all this going on right now.
You know, you make up an excellent point, and I wasn't being fair, because there are other public employees besides the police. Like,
yeah.
There's the guy who files the paperwork at the jail. There's the lady who's the county clerk who does the paperwork for your marriage certificate. They drug test that lady.
Yeah.
Why are they drug testing the lady who has to file your marriage certificate? This is not high stakes stuff. She's not driving. Let her smoke a little weed on the weekend. This is not fair. You can do better, Washington.
We are going to be moving out to the Pacific Ocean and out to Hawaii and talk a little bit about what's going on over there with cannabis legalization. And once again, Hawaii, and they've been trying this year after year after year, but this year it got a little further just to legalize adult use, period. That's what they're trying to do. It flew through the Senate. They added some stuff in there. It looked like a pretty good bill. They like just had civil penalties if you were growing cannabis outside of the regulated market. So kind of put some decriminalization pieces in there.
Right.
But it went over to the House and it just stopped. But the governor said he was going to sign it. But it's just odd to me that it just – and they did this thing, which is very frustrating in the legislature, where they don't vote on it or anything. They just let it die because they don't pass it by a certain deadline. So the House just didn't even pick it up and the bill just died.
You might say, you know, you might hear people say, oh, they killed it in committee, or they waited, like this one, they waited to put it up for a vote until after a deadline, so they just let it expire rather than voting on it. It's basically a way for a couple of people in the legislature who like hold key joints in committee. This is why in all these representative bodies, like the Congress, the United States, and the Senate, and all of these places, they have these committee appointments, and everyone fights over these committee appointments. I'm like, they don't actually want to go to the committees, but they can kill each other's bills before they ever see the light of day in these committees by just refusing them to advance them past committee. So basically, this is going against the will of most of the people in Hawaii.
Yep.
And the governor of Hawaii. So everyone wants cannabis to be legal in Hawaii, except apparently the House of Representatives. And I think that people in Hawaii, if they really care about this subject, they should probably find out who these bad actors are in the House of Representatives and do their best to make sure they're not elected next year.
You know, I was surprised, though, with the poll numbers. They said only 52% supported adult use and 31% were outright against it. Those numbers seemed the support seemed a little low, and the outright against it, 31% is not low percentage. And,
well, I think you know, have to look at demographics.
Yeah, I was just going off the poll numbers in the article there that they had given there. But if one thing I would say about Hawaii not passing it, if they're looking over here across the water over here to the United States, the mainland, and what's going on with the cannabis industry over here right now, I feel like maybe you can't even hardly blame them being a little wary of bringing this into their state, because there's just so much unknowns. And like it or not, there's not a whole lot of states that are doing the adult use like really great these days. New Mexico's doing okay, but a lot of them are having these just out of control problems.
Yeah, I don't think it's us as a consumer. It's not our responsibility, or even a home grower or a cannabis media person, to take responsibility for the outlaw behavior of either the police or the people that grow cannabis illegally. It's not our problem. It's not something I necessarily even care about. We're failing to regulate the cannabis industry properly, just like we're failing to regulate the petrochemical industry properly, or the transport of those chemicals across waterways, railroads properly, right? We're seeing fires in food plants because they're not following fire regulations, because they don't hire inspectors because of Trump's deregulation push. More chemical plants are exploding in Texas. Mm-hmm. We don't regulate industries properly in America. So to expect cannabis to be any different is naive. So why regulate it at all?
Yeah, but Hawaii over there, pretty, you know, they're out there by themselves. They're looking at that going, we don't want any of that. So, you know, I don't know what's going on in the minds of the Hawaiian legislatures, but something's going on if the whole House just said, no, we don't want it. It didn't say just a couple people were against it. It just stopped. So we'll keep an eye on the Hawaii legalize it. They do have a medical system over there. So medical patients are being taken care of in Hawaii. So that is a good thing. So let's hope that sooner or later Hawaii will get some type of legalization.
All right.
So on to our next story, which is we're going to talk about Leafly for a minute. And Leafly, if you're not familiar with that, is a online website. I first became familiar with Leafly all the way back in 2013 when I went and got my first medical cannabis card. On the way out the door, one of the sheets that they gave me was talking about Leafly and what they did. And at that time, they were largely just a strain database, and they had all the strains on there, and you could find a lot of information about strains. But they have been around for a really long time and are based here in Seattle and have made themselves an established part of the cannabis community. And this is kind of some bad news, but a sign of the times. They're going to stop doing the Leafly news, which you were telling me before the show is really a disappointing fact for you.
Well, yeah, you know, and I'm not, you know, I'm not like, I understand that people have problems with Leafly and other places like Weed Maps business practices, but they were one of the few places that did really good reporting. I don't know if you remember about back at a couple couple, 3 years ago. It's been a while. The vitamin E acetate they were putting in vapes. Mm-hmm. A lot of that on the ground reporting was done by Leafly or on a Leafly affiliate. They do a really cool end of the year cannabis jobs report.
Yep.
They did a lot of really good coverage that I don't think anyone else is doing quite the same way. So when they said that they're getting rid of their newsroom, I was kind of upset because I don't know of any other cannabis publications doing this kind of on-the-ground reporting that can be somewhat adversarial with the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cost them a lot of money to do those on-the-ground reports, because I've done a couple on-the-ground sort of like direct news stories rather than covering headlines and things like that. And it's a lot of travel. It's a lot of time. So if they're paying their reporters well, which they probably are, they were well-funded over there at Leafly, then it's going to cost them a lot. And I'm know this 100%. The advertising dollars are kind of drying up for some of these sites because of the pullback on the cannabis industry. So they're having to cut back on some of these. And so I feel like this news thing at Leafly is a direct result of the advertising dollars drying up. And I agree. I think it's a really big loss, because like it's really hard and difficult to do those on the ground things. And there's nobody, Vice was doing a lot of these, that
yes,
website.
They were.
But I haven't seen as much of those recently as I used to.
Well, it's funny. It takes capitalists not to be able to make money doing weed.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Yeah, it's been crazy, and I think that it's been very disappointing seeing this downturn in cannabis and seeing that a lot of what was driving all of these like bad business practices, this low interest rate, excess cash. And when it dried up, all of these supposed big dogs, quote unquote, couldn't even pay their bills. So all these people that came in with this unlimited capital to wipe out mom and pop can't even hang without their angel investors. It's been kind of gratifying and fun to watch how pathetic they've been, but it's also been frustrating because it's taking out some of the good things with it as well. And some of the good things that money brought was advertising dollars to things like you said, like this newsroom at Leafly and some of this other stuff that people aren't covering anymore. I feel like the cannabis space was saturated, and now people are kind of actively avoiding it, and that sucks.
All right, our last story, and that this is more of what we were just talking about, the cannabis pullback. We're going to go down to Oregon, and this is talking about how Oregon produced twice as much cannabis as they needed a year ago. And so, of course, the prices are tanking. They were saying 95% of the cannabis in Oregon is produced outdoors. They are growing a lot. But, it's a fluctuation of the market up and down. But I just feel like you were just saying, leave it to a capitalist not to be able to make money off of weed. I just feel like they're putting, sometimes, some of these companies are just putting way too much into marketing, sales, all the different packaging, and all the different crazy products they're coming out with, and it's just turning the industry upside down because they can't keep it up. Because like they were saying in the article, Oregon's not getting any new customers. You had the people that were like in the illicit market say, hey, we're going to try out the legal market. They came in and they're like, some of them stayed and some of them went back to the illicit, but there's nobody new coming in.
No. Yeah. And that, most people who consume cannabis in Oregon are probably established cannabis consumers. You've got people, coming of age.
Yeah.
But I don't know what percentage of those people don't become loyal customers at a cannabis shop or you know, immediately are captured by the illicit market or start home growing. You know, there's a lot of competition out there. And I don't think home growers really can competing with the shops. But like you said, the illicit market probably is. But I think the illicit market in Oregon has shrunk since the end of the pandemic. I think a lot of what drove the what has always driven the illicit market in Oregon is usually out of state sales, right? So there's some weed that goes to shops and there's some weeds that gets sent out of state or sent up to Portland. But like the illicit market in Oregon is kind of a misnomer. Like I think that, yeah, there is a small like, you know, gray market for weed here, but I think a majority of like the black market weed in Oregon does not stay in Oregon. It goes elsewhere, if that makes sense.
It's the boom and bust system of capitalism. That's a whole nother show, but it's the thing is with the cannabis industry is so new. So these boom and bust cycles do hurt small business owners and some of these small grows. And so we really hope that they can make it through. And we need to get this fixed. Quit all the exclusory licensing and everything. Let's try to bring in the illicit market to the regulated market. Figure out how to work with it. However you do that, like you said, just don't regulate and decriminalize it. Home grows.
Yeah, I want to be able to sell my clones at the farmer's market on Thursday.
Right. Yep.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
Uncle Dick's garden update. It is April 27th, 2023, and I am in gardening zone 8B, and this is Uncle Dig with your garden update. I generally don't go outside permanently until after May 9th or Mother's Day, whichever comes first, as it helps me remember other things in my life, and because I know the light cycle won't flower most photo period cannabis plants. Before we get into the photo period garden update, let's talk about how these last two bust-down Patek autoflowers from Gem Seeker Genetics yielded. The bust-down Patek 2 yielded 2.01 ounces, and the bust-down Patek 4 yielded 1.73 ounces. It was a very good winter autoflower run. I grew out a total of 6 plants and got 11.74 ounces. So I'm very happy. Now let's talk about what will the outdoor photo period run looks like, okay? So every year for the past couple of years, I have been running a mixture of regular seeds and feminized seeds in my outdoor gardens. I like some things that aren't available in feminized seeds, so if I want to grow them, I have to buy regular seeds and sex them at home. I don't grow cannabis male plants because I have no interest in breeding, and I don't want seeds in the cannabis that I'm going to be consuming. There are two ways you can spot males. You can wait for them to express their sex naturally, and or you can clone them and flower the clones or the original plants to determine sex and then grow out, you know, what you have left. I use both methods to ensure 100% success rates at determining gender. This double method hasn't failed me yet. So 5 of the 10 photo period plants in my garden turned out to be male. Both the Wedding Crasher bag seed plants were male, as well as 2 of the Fire of Maroof plants. The Sol Gelato 33 bag seed was male. Very disappointing. That left me with 5 plants left to clone and sex. The Jaeger bag seed, 3 Fire of Maroof plants, and the Forbidden Fruit bag seed. All the plants are doing pretty well except the Jaeger, and she only has a slight nitrogen deficiency. I will most likely up-pot all these plants in like 3 days to 3-gallon smart pots. I took clones 3 days ago, and I took 2 clones off each plant. I hope to sex 1 clone and use the spares for something else. The reason I want to wait 3 days to up-pot these girls is because I topped each of the plants today to encourage more lateral branching and to keep their heights at manageable levels until they go up into their final containers. I don't like to do anything traumatic to the plants except after they've had given 3 days to recover. So generally, if I've cut off some branches or whatever, I won't up pot or do some other shock until they've had 3 days to recover from the initial shock. Whatever it is, whether I'm trellising, training, topping, whatever, I don't go at it multiple days at a time. Once I determine which plants are female, I will be germinating feminized seed to fill the holes in my garden. Also, some plants shock out when brought from artificial light into the sunlight. Those plants will be destroyed and replaced as well. I have plans for an outdoor autoflower garden as well this year, but we're not there yet. That isn't even really a good idea until late May at the earliest, due to ambient nighttime temperatures. I will fill y'all in more on that plan later. I have to move a bunch of soil out of the way, and I tore out my old chicken fence. This year, I am doing organic dry amendments only run in 20-gallon smart pots. I will mix Fox Farms and all-purpose 444 fertilizer and worm castings at first, and that will be my initial mix. I will then amend with only dry amendments after that. I'm trying to keep this as intellectually and physically simple as possible this year due to a persistently troubling back injury and a desire to enjoy what physical prowess I have left on some hiking trails this year. So I've scaled back the vegetable garden in that regard. In that there isn't one. I hope to use these 20-gallon pots as no-till beds, or at least as stationary beds. I like the idea of constantly building the soil for years and seeing what happens. I have used larger containers in the past, but I have both physical and financial limitations I did not have in the past. But the wheel turns for us all. That's it for the garden update. Let's overgrow the world.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
And now on to our It's a Bus segment, and this is the part of the show where we talk about the continued war on drugs and the continued war on cannabis. And this episode of the It's a Bus segment, we are going to Tennessee to, I have to say, Dig, probably one of the worst It's a Bus, most shocking It's a Bus that we have ever covered. And I honestly feel it's not getting enough news coverage for the insanity that happened to this family in Tennessee.
Yeah, this is kind of wild, man.
And so just to recap.
Yeah, I'll go into it, man. Yeah. So this man and this woman were traveling with their 5 children, and they were stopped by a Tennessee Highway Patrol officer. And they found a small amount, we're talking 5 grams, of what was believed to be marijuana. So, of course, Williams, the driver, the male driver of the vehicle, was charged with simple possession, which, of course, is wrong and not cool. But that's not even the bad part of the story. Then mother is present, right? They've charged the driver with possession. Mother's still here. But the Child Protective Services took control of the children. So they stole their children.
Yeah. She went to try to go bail him out. And then when she showed up to the jail, the Child Protective Services of Tennessee came swooping in and took the 5 kids, one of which was a breastfeeding baby. And I just want to mention that this family is a black family, and I just want to say that that is the number one reason they were arrested and had their kids taken in Tennessee, because they had the cannabis. But it's just the ongoing war on black people, especially in the South. And this is just this is just one example of what's going on down in the South when it comes to this. This kind of stuff is happening all the time.
They didn't even have any evidence that the mother used cannabis. Those drug results tests are pending. They ripped a baby from her mother's breast. Over 5 grams of weed that her husband, like, that's so messed up.
Yeah, and they made her take a hair follicle test before she gets her kids back, and like you just mentioned, those tests are still pending. So this story has not ended, and I honestly wanted to get the mother on the show, but I wanted to make sure that this was all done because it's all so sensitive. It's just an insane story, and so if you're out there listening, check this out, put this on your news feed, and keep an eye on this. Call your senators. Tell folks about this story, because I feel like this should get up to the news a little more, because this is what happens. This is the end result of what happens when you continue to put this prohibition thing out there front and center. And anything like here in Washington State, with the home, like a black man right now in Washington State is 5 times more likely to get arrested for home growing cannabis than their white counterparts. This thing here in Tennessee is the end result, the worst, one of the worst things you could happen because of that prohibition. And it's still going on all around the country.
This is why the fight's never really over, is because you could take a wrong turn at Albuquerque and this kind of shit can happen to you.
Yeah, it's a very, very disturbing, as you could tell from Dig and I talking about it. I've been watching this story for going on a month. And, it's just something that... I'm from the South, so it really bothers me a lot, because I've seen a lot of this. And like I said, this kind of stuff is going on a lot. In Alabama, they were taking mother's kids if they tested positive for drugs. They would come in and take your kid. If you were pregnant and you had your baby in jail and you tested positive for drugs, they would take your kid. In Alabama, I think they had that same law in Georgia. So it's really some negative stuff going on out there with this.
And they sneak the test on you. So you go in for some prenatal care.
Yep.
And you take a urinary test for your hormones. The doctor will go ahead and test you for cannabis against your will and go ahead and take your other kids. So, like, this doesn't just affect people, like... Like in a vacuum, it affects everyone who would like to get medical care when they're pregnant. Listen, cannabis can stay in your system for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Just because a young mother tests positive while she's pregnant does not mean she even used while she was pregnant. So this is not; these are not just laws, and they're enabled by continued prohibition.
It's not over. This has been going on for a month plus, and so we will keep an eye on that, and we'll bump this up and put it in our news segment if anything changes on this. So thank you so much for being on the show today, Dig. I would like to thank our guests, and I'd like to thank all our listeners. Don't forget to go over there and subscribe to our YouTube channel, and you can go back and listen to all our old episodes. I have all the way back to episode 1, Dig, when I hit R on my laptop and recorded the first Cannabis Corner episode. Don't hold it against me, folks. It was an early podcast. I kept them all raw, Dig, because I wanted to keep the evolution of the show, kind of put that out there. So part of doing small radio and podcasting is just kind of learning how to do it. So go over there and check that out on our YouTube channel. And thank you for listening. And see you next time, Dig.
See ya.
If you have questions or would like to comment on the show, you can reach us at thecannabiscorner840@gmail.com. To listen to back episodes or to subscribe to the show, find us all across the internet by searching The Cannabis Corner. How can folks get in touch with you, Dig?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Uncle Dig, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bagseed Chronicles, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you to Radio Tacoma and KTQA for their continued support. I'd also like to thank Aaron Folsch for his production assistance. And finally, thank you for joining us on The Cannabis Corner.